What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
It's a very chilly, rainy,
so chilly, so rainy, so depressing
day.
So depressing. And I have this smell on my body of, like, restaurant. You know when, like, restaurants, like, don't have good ventilation?
Like oil?
Yeah, it's not great.
Egg oil.
It was a delicious over easy eggs. Very well seasoned.
Great.
Anyways, hi, Jeremy.
Hi. I just baked a loaf of bread and had a little while I waited. So it was
nice. Now, what kind of bread?
This is a Claire de Boer brown bread recipe that I made a few weeks ago.
Oh, right.
And I think I followed the directions better this time.
Claire de Boer, you know, the queen. It's
very nice. Very nice. Very easy. Very nice.
Very easy and very nice. You know, I'm not a bread maker.
Yeah, nor am I. But I have been doing toast every day, which it just delights me so. Ah, it delights me so. but I've been doing the Ezekiel frozen bread.
Uh-huh.
You know, that you buy in from the frozen foods section, and it's pre-sliced and it's pre-frozen.
Uh-huh.
And I just take out a couple slices and toast it up and put some butter on it.
Delicious.
But I've eaten all of that, so I thought, I'll just make my own bread today, I guess.
How resourceful, Jeremy.
So that's what
How
I did.
Very resourceful.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about this video I watched last night. Where Timmy Chalamet and Austin Butler are trying British snacks. Have you watched this?
I think I might have watched this.
And yeah, there's a part where there's this, like, very hysterical confusion where they're like, they open up the thing and it's scones or scones. And then they're like, well, you eat it with the, you know, jam and cream. And he was like, and Timmy's looking at these, like, this jar of jam and this cloth. He's like, the German cream. I'm not really sure what you mean by that. And they're like, the jam and cream. And then, and Austin Butler at this point is laughing, and Timmy's still like, I just don't understand, I guess, what you're saying.
What are you saying?
And then Austin Butler is like, jam and cream, and Timmy goes, oh, jam and cream. I was like, you better work, Timmy. You're from New York. We love. Austin Butler. You know what I mean?
Yeah, also Timmy, I feel like Timmy's, for me, is now serving more, like, young Tom Cruise than
interesting.
Other zones that I, you know, of, like, a Johnny Depp or whatnot.
Oh. So that's, he's still, I don't know. I think he's kind of carved out his own thing. It's like,
yeah, for sure. We don't need to box little Timmy in.
No, he's a little bit like a baby Patrick Dempsey. You know, like, there's shades of things that have happened in the past, but he's his own thing. Now, Austin Butler, on the other hand, is Hollywood.
Yeah, well, he has, like, a withholding kind of personality that's nice. You know, like a movie person.
But he has a sunny disposition. And he's just got this crazy voice and this, like, he's just, like, very beautiful looking. It's crazy. Anyways.
You know who's crazy that became Humphrey Bogart? Isn't this wild? Isn't this, like, a wild thing that happened? We're watching In a Lonely Place, which is an incredible movie. Wow.
I don't know anything about
it. We haven't watched the whole thing.
I don't know that. What is this?
It's a movie about, Humphrey Bogart plays a Hollywood screenwriter.
Humphrey Bogart.
Humphrey Bogart.
I mean, it's a really gross name. It's truly grotesque.
It's absolutely, the whole thing is bizarre, but undeniable. And we're like, well, you were, I don't know how this works, but like, your face is crazy. I was like, oh, crazy. Humphrey Bogart should play Bob Dylan. Like, that's right.
Bring him back. Not
little Timmy. You
know? Bring him back.
Yeah. I mean, AI, there's enough footage to make that happen, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But it's wild. It's wild. It's just, like, it's an energetic thing that happens.
He's got a movie. He's a movie star. He's a real movie star.
It's a spirit.
Humphrey Bogart. He's a boggart.
That's crazy.
Hi, you. What has happened? What's happened? I saw some shows.
I have no fucking clue what's going on.
You have no news.
I don't know. I can't do these rainy days.
I understand.
Really dragging me down.
They'll go away eventually. Just not
it's
right
the,
now.
It's like the cold rainy day. I'm like, ugh, yeah. What am I in London?
Where? What do you think I'm doing here?
What?
What? Excuse me. What do you think? I'm just going to be stuck in this house with this rain all the time? What do you think I am?
Let me out of here.
Get me out of this house. It's dark.
It's going to snow tomorrow.
Is it really? There is a chill in the air. Let me tell you what. It felt like spring rain for a day, but now I'm like, nope, this is not that. Mm-mm. I've just been wet all the time. And yet sleeping with a humidifier on because I have been waking up with blood snots.
Yeah.
The nose is the first to
say I need moisture.
Yeah, it really is. The nose knows. But I have been doing a thing where I just like cut all the rind off of some lemons and maybe an orange or two if I have them around, blend them into a pulp. And then I mix them up with water, coconut water, and maybe whatever other thing I have around. I had pomegranate juice in my house recently. And then I just drink a ton. I just drink a ton of it. And feeling hydrated.
Gallons and just peeing.
Yeah, I have been peeing a lot more. That's great. I've gone through a phase where I just have not peed in the night. I like don't have to get up to pee, but I have had to the last couple days. Anyways, I saw the
extreme hydrating.
If you're hydrated, you're going to pee. That's what they say. I went and saw Trisha Brown.
Glacial Decoy?
I saw Glacial Decoy, this new No Way. No Way. Soulier?
I know. I should know this too because...
You filmed it.
Dealt with this.
No Way, yeah. Soulier. Uh-huh. And another Trisha Brown piece called like...
In and Out.
Yeah, In-N-Out Burger.
Originally staged the In-N-Out, of course. Yum. Oh, I could eat that.
What was that piece called? Nobody knows, but it doesn't matter.
Nobody knows.
If you must know. Oh, it's called like Working
if
Title.
If You Must Know, it was a good title.
I feel like
too.
It was called Working
Title. Oh, yeah, Working Title.
And Glacial Decoy is ever the exemplar of dance aesthetics. Like how beautiful can a dance be? You need not look any further than Glacial Decoy. Rauschenberg slayed the house down.
Those
boots,
slides.
Mama. The slides are incredible. The only sound of the piece is like the fake sound of like a projector going click. It's just so brilliant.
Do you think originally that was real? How was that originally projected? That's the big question. And
maybe
how is
it
projected
was,
now?
Maybe it was being projected by a thing that you actually had to go click. I don't know. But now it's being projected in the way that digital. I have no idea. Maybe they were back projected. I don't know. But at any rate... beautiful dance, very well known. I'm not going to tell you any more about it, but if you can go to the library and watch it, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Yay,
we're not talking about dance anymore.
We don't do that.
If you want to know about dance, just go to the library and watch it.
Go to the library. Then they did this new piece, Noé Soulier, that was about falling. And if you want to... Well, wait. I just want to start by saying I thought it was a great piece. I enjoyed parts of that dance, like, as much as one can enjoy dance. And there was a thing that Burr Johnson did at the beginning and the end of the dance, and it was smart mm-hmm. that it kind of, like, closed the piece, because when he did it the first time in the dance, I was like, that is perhaps, like, one of the most beautiful, like, visual moments I've ever participated in watching dance. I was like, that is just so heaven. Wow.
Okay.
And the lighting was good, and the sound was excellent, and coming off of having just seen Glacial Decoy, this piece was a good example of, like, where costumes can just, like, not do a thing. And that's okay, because sometimes...
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Sometimes costumes do more than they should, or sometimes they, like, uh-huh. take away, but this is an example of just, like, yeah. costumes being...
worn.
Nothing. And also, like, maybe, like, nothing to the detriment of the piece, because they were not in the feeling of the dance. There was a kind of, like, severity and intensity to this dance that just, like, did not exist in these costumes that were the primary colors. They were blue, yellow, and red. And I was like, what is this about? Like, anyways, watching that dance, I was like, this company is looking good.
How long was it? 20 minutes?
Something like that. Minutes?
10? 20. I just remember feeling like it was very short when I saw a rehearsal, which was, like, you know, 8 months ago or whatever.
It was perhaps not finished. But, yeah, it was, like, the first part of the show was Glacial Decoy and the new dance, and then there was an intermission. So it must not have been too long. And then, but the dancers looked tremendous. Lindsay Jones, Burr Johnson, Patrick Needham, Cecily Campbell, Jen Payan, some people I didn't know. Christian. What's Christian's last name?
Christian.
Alan.
Oh, I don't know.
There we go. We were in the New York 100 Solos together, Christian Allen. Uh-huh. Anyways, excellent.
You had a good time. And then there was that other piece, which was what? Fine?
No, it was great. It was long. It was longer. The costumes are grotesque. I truly thought, how did this happen? But I then encountered people that I know after the show who were very charmed by the costumes. And these aren't, like, stupid or people who, like, have stupid taste. They just, like, they're not for me. They're just not for me. They're too craft for me. They're craft. Uh-huh.
You know, but I don't really love those, the sleeve of the Glacial Decoy either, but...
Oh, you don't? You know. It's a reference to things, you know?
Yeah, it's a thing. It's fine.
But I mean, those costumes would be also exquisite without the sleeve thing, but the sleeve kind of reinforces something interesting. Anyways.
Right, it would be more even like sleepy time bed dream. Without that.
Without, you're exactly the drop right.
thing.
Yeah.
It becomes something.
Yeah.
Someone's
little sleevelet fell down to their wrist. And I thought, pick your thing up. And they
pick
did.
Pick it up.
They pick picked it up.
Pick it up.
And the last dance was excellent, and it had solos for dancers, which was so nice to see. Like, I mean, again, I'm going to say it. Lindsay Jones is a dancer who, like, in the context of things like John Higginbotham, you think, well, isn't she just the cutest and, like, she's so charming? And then she's in Pam, and you think, well, isn't she the most heartbreaking? And then she's in Trisha Brown, and you think, isn't she the most severe, austere, grounded? You know, like, she can... She has so many characters to the way Lindsay Jones can dance, and yet the thing that is always there is kind of unflappable. You can't push her over. She's just so grounded in this, like, what one might perceive as a lanky body, which, like, generally aren't as grounded, but this it's just incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah, I definitely really enjoyed watching Burr and Lindsay in the rehearsal. It's like, I mean, this was like in a rehearsal room, no lighting. The music was there music? I don't know. So it's pretty like, oh, okay, I guess that's a dance.
Right.
But they're tremendous. So.
Well, there's a kind of music now. Sounds. There were sounds.
Yeah.
But at any rate.
Suspect that that was the music, but I don't know. Yeah. Well, that's great.
Great show. I left just thrilled. I thought the Trisha Brown Dance Company continues to have the best dancers, and I'm glad to see. I didn't love their first foray into new work, but I think the second foray is good. So that's nice to see.
But you love new work. You know what I mean?
Well, we love new work. Absorbed. We love. Okay, then I saw the Juilliard Spring Dance Concert.
I just had dinner with Adam Weiner last night.
Speaking
of Juilliard. Did you see Adam at this?
Adam, no, I did not see them at the show.
Different performance, I guess.
Okay. I saw it on Saturday night. And yeah, I went to the show because the second half of the program was Map, which is a Shen Wei piece, and I'd already seen a rehearsal of it, and I danced this piece quite a lot, and I was curious to see, you know, how this works in the context of, like, a staged dance, because a lot of Shen Wei's work came out of, like, much experimentation and, like, development of ideas individually that kind of, you know, got put together, curated by Shen Wei into these dances. And Map is the most kind of choreographed in the vein of his, like, dances that, like, move a lot, because in the other dances, they're, like, hyper-structured, but, like, in moments where people are doing different things, like, you have to build your own material based on these, like, very strict parameters. But Map has a little bit less of that. Map is like, these are the moves. So the first two pieces on the show were a piece by Kyle Abraham and a piece by Bobby Jean and Orr. And I struggled, I have to say, with part one of the program. And I love a Kyle Abraham piece. And this one was deeply in the vein of his kind of more silken qualities, like very lyrical, super connected bodies, like being super smooth, but it was just so much that, and like the costumes sort of reinforced that and the lighting reinforced that, and after a while I was like, is what else, you know? But that was kind of it, and I mean, that's a strong statement to be like, this is what we're doing. We're leaning into this one quality. But I just was, I was there to see Map, and I somehow wasn't set up to watch that piece that night. Then they did a Bobby Jean, Smith, and Orr Schreiber piece. And I no, I just like, you know what?
What?
It was very, very impressive, right? Like, and these dancers were clearly, I think they felt they'd been given a gift to be able to do this dance. Like, that was the feeling you got from the performance they gave. And that's really exciting when you see dancers who are just, like, so invested in the thing that they're doing.
Yeah, I also think that what they're doing is for the dancers, I suspect.
But
these are dances for dancers.
And also, there's a kind of audience for their work. And I think I'm not it. And I appreciate their work, and I appreciate the kind of physical rigor of it. But, like, as a gay man, and, like, a person who is invested in, like, futurism, is that a word?
Sure, of course.
And like, I'm invested in people who are engaged with ideas that are trying to step away from the past, or like ideas of the patriarchy and Bobby Jean and Orr are aesthetically very, like, centrally situated in conventional gender. And
yeah,
it surprises me.
Not even just conventional gender, but I think also,
like, old ideas.
I don't even know. Right. And not even, like, conventional, like, there's something that feels ancient.
Right. There's a specificity. About, like,
the dynamic between these set genders.
Women. Yeah. Yes. There's just such a specificity to, like, the way male dancers are characterized and female dancers are characterized in the work that I find that it is not in step with who these dancers are, certainly. Like, when the curtain goes up and you see young people wearing black trousers and white Oxford shirts and, you know, black Oxford shoes, and it's like a 20-year-old, you know, young male presenting person who knows what their sexuality is or how they identify in life, but they're playing the part of this old idea of what it is to be a male presenting person. And all
this
of
this is
the
part
men,
of what is so bizarre about watching, like, story ballets in general.
Right.
It's the kind of stock characterization. Of,
right.
Which feels like a simplification.
But it's a dance that's made within the decade, this century. And it's employing these, like, kind of Bauchian aesthetics of, like, how men and women are on stage.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's like, we wear clothes that represent our gender. I'm a woman,
yeah,
and I wear a dress. And I'm a man, and I wear trousers and a button-up shirt or a white A-tank, and I, as a man, behave like a clown, like an idiot, like a baboon, like I want to fight or I want to fuck.
Uh-huh.
And right. I'm a woman, and I'm an object of desire. I'm centered in my approach. I'm unflappable, and I'm a thing of beauty and grace.
Yeah. And it seems like a very consistent aspect of the work that is even in that documentary.
Mm-hmm. Although
I'm
not
entirely sure that it's a chosen thing, but it is ever present.
But do you remember, like, what Bobby Jean was kind of building for herself in that gallery performance?
With the bag?
Right, where she's humping the bag naked. Like, this is, there is, like, a very overt kind of horniness to their work, but, like, this dressed kind of version, like, concert stage version, I think it's not experimental in that way, you know? Anyways.
Yeah, that is interesting, actually, to, like, think about, which, you know, this aspect of the documentary that felt kind of comedic of, like, the bag.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually, like, probably more compelling than the rest, which is, like, getting it done yourself and not needing a man.
Well, I think Bobby Jean in that piece in the documentary there was this, like, very strong thrust of, like, effort. Like, there was something about effort that she was grappling with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really interesting. I'm just sort of, like, not so interested in, I'm just not so interested in this thing. But guess what? Other people are. They were collabing, loving. So, and I am also appreciative of, like, these dancers dancing so excellently. That is certainly not to be dismissed. But I am concerned about the kind of, like, aesthetic ethos of the work. There was, like, a gesture towards something, because there was, like, a tall woman in the dance who wore pants and a white blouse that was clearly, like, geared towards a woman's body. And also she was wearing high heels or, like, you know, a low heel. So I was like, well, not quite, but, like,
I'm not entirely sure. I think that there's, I don't know. I feel like maybe there's something more nefarious going on whereby even if you, like, switched, complicated the gender dynamic and, like, swapping kind of gender roles between the male and female presenting bodies, mm-hmm. that you still wouldn't be left with, like, a kind of similar, simplified...
Well, no, because it's still aesthetically, like, so far into a direction that you are immediately confronted by what the meanings of those things. And it becomes a kind of, like, oh, but now we're cross-dressing. And you're like, well, that's not also not engaging with, like, who these people are in 2024, you know?
Right.
Anyways, I talk about this a lot, and it is part of my own practice, and I realize it's not a part of everyone else's
practice. Nor does it need to be. I mean,
no.
I think my sort of most cutting read of this is that I don't know that this is, like, something that's being thought about a lot.
Right.
Like, right. If this was, like, a more, or felt, and I don't know, intention or whatever, I don't know. So, and I don't, I've only seen a few things, which have led me to not want to see more things, but, you know.
Right. Well, I am struck by a feeling of it being intentionally not contemporary, perhaps it is not intentional. Perhaps it is just the you know, I realize we all have different life experiences. And, like,
yeah, and Bobby, we care about different things and we pay attention to different things. And that makes all the difference.
Uh-huh.
Two roads diverged in a wood.
And sometimes I forget, especially being in a dance community, that, like, most of the people on planet Earth are straight.
Yeah, and also not thinking about anything. So, there you go.
There you go.
And, like, who's going to see a dance show? People who, like, love dancing.
Absolutely.
You know?
And they deliver on that, for sure.
Yeah, people are definitely moving around and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. So tell me about your experience of MAP.
So oh, I almost forgot. So then there's intermission. We come back.
You were like, do I need to watch more dance?
Stuart was with me, but then he left at the intermission because it was not short. So then we get to MAP, and my experience of it. Excellent. Excellent to see a piece that's just so determined in its concept. It's not always, it is a piece that I almost wish would occasionally deviate from its own logic, but it really doesn't.
It's like it's boring.
And so, yeah, it does. And that's okay. But what isn't boring about it is this kind of, like, physical feat to watch these people get through it, like, not only physically but also mentally, because it's just so much. There's parts that are just a lot of counting and a lot require a great deal of focus because they go on for a long time. And it also moves.
That's an interesting aspect that, like, as the kind of dance viewer that I am, no idea. Like, I have no idea what this piece is either, but that's not something that I would think about, like, being hard or something, because I don't have any relationship to, like, that work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. I assume that there's no kind of signaling of that kind of work that's being done to the audience. There's no, like, residue of it.
Well, I don't know, like, how much Steve Reich...
Because you obviously have, like, been inside this
piece. Right. I think, like, there is something undeniable about this piece in terms of its kind of academic rigor, like, because it really follows this Steve Reich score that has a kind of relentlessness to it.
Mm.
okay. in a way that feels very clear, where you're like, uh-huh. oh, so they're the music like is really
kind of announcing how insane this yeah. is.
The music yeah. does announce itself as being like, dolls, we are doing repeat, repeat, and it's slight variation.
It's very
repeat.
Repetitive.
Oh, yes.
The dance itself.
Yes, it has a lot of repetition, but then it has just like, oh, God, it's just really, it's a lot of work. And these, obviously, I mean, these young Juilliard bodies are so capable, and there are things about doing that work that just require a lot more time and investment and investigation, but like
for sort of stylistically.
Yeah, but for a group of people who like have been working on it for a couple months, I was like, incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was cool to see that piece, and I
And you did.
Yeah. It didn't make me want to dance, so that's good.
go through that yeah. scenario.
Whereas, like, there were certain aspects of the Trish Brown show where I was like, I wanna know what it feels like to dance. But that's okay. Then I go line that's dancing, nice. And I'm like, I do know what it's like to dance. Those are the dance shows that I witnessed this week, that I bore witness to.
Dance shows.
I got a lovely message from, and I have to reply, so excuse me, Terry O'Connor, for not
pardon me, right? Pardon.
Pardon me. I got a nice text from Terry that said, you know, that he appreciated my, are we calling them reviews? My commentary on Evie Allison's show. Oh. And I thought, well, you're welcome. And so I'm going to write that in a text
anytime,
message.
Anytime,
right,
doll.
Right when we get off this pod. Right when we get off this pod.
That's nice. Oh, my God. I had so last week's episode and every other episode was on the brink of not happening.
Why?
Well, I logged into the, you know, what is now Spotify, what have you, and, like, nothing was working.
Oh, dear.
And clearly something had changed, and that wasn't working, and I tried different browsers. I tried, like, you know, everything. Think of, like, what's going on. So then I ended up being able to post it on the app on the phone, which was no small feat.
What?
And I wasn't able to, like, do some things I normally do, whatever. But I posted. It seemed to post fine, whatever.
Okay.
And then I, like, kept checking, trying to, like, see if it would work. I figured it was, like, some kind of update that would eventually resolve, and it wasn't. And then at some point, like, I got logged out.
Oh, no.
You know, and they're, like, there's, like, you can log. This is, like, a lot of complicated dynamics with this because it's, like, it was Anchor, which was bought by Spotify, and they've, like, slowly, like, what feels like every week there's like a different thing, like a different way. Mm-hmm. And they slowly have like transferred it more into Spotify universe.
Mm.
And it's just been absolutely annoying. But this past week was sort of the, where I was like, maybe the podcast just ends because we can't host anymore. Cause like, they've just like eaten it.
That's it, everybody. It's over. So it can't be posted.
This morning I was on with customer service and like...
Oh, no.
It all... Now everything fully seems to be working, so hopefully... And if not,
service.
No one will ever hear this, and that'll be that.
And that's that. We'll just keep recording it. Don't worry.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you'll can listen to it at the library in 100 years.
Yeah.
But that's nice that people are listening. And
yes, we do have listeners. And Evie, go ahead.
Do you want to solicit help in finding a studio from our listeners?
Oh, yes. I got some lovely recommendations on Instagram. Thank you so much for those of you who reached out via
Great.
Instagram. Harriet and I are losing our studio space at Abrams Art Center starting in June, and we are looking to move off all of our things to a different space. We would love to pay as little money as possible because poor... And that's the reality. And I think that ultimately this is going to be a great opportunity for Harriet and I.
I think it's absolutely going to be a game changer.
Yeah, because it'll force us to look through all of our things and really assess what we need and don't need. And also, like, perhaps have a window and maybe, you know, maybe being in a different part of the city will shift how we feel about things. And I think mm-hmm. newness is always, can be good. We've been here for a long time, 10 years.
Yeah, I think this is a great move.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna
oh, God. I'm actually sitting here right now contemplating packing it all up, but it's seeming overwhelming, but...
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Well, maybe when the time comes, can solicit some assistance with that,
too. Oh, I'm gonna pay for this. This is not... I'm an adult now. I can just pay, but I am gonna have to, you know, sort it.
Right.
But anyways, I made Carla Lali's green minestrone soup, and it was absolutely delicious.
I made it. I think I watched that. I vaguely watched it, I guess.
I did have to add in a little bit of better than bouillon, because there was a point at which I was like, this is a little bathwatery, but, which makes sense, because, like, at no point, I was like, at what point are you developing the kind of, like, umami brothness of it all? And so... But I also didn't use wine. I used vinegar instead, which was fine. But anyways, it was absolutely delicious. So I highly recommend doing it. And
oh, my God. I made some incredible mushroom thing from Hedy McKinnon that was unbelievable,
people. Who's Hedy McKinnon?
This is the Tender Heart cookbook.
Okay.
Whatever it's called. A sleigh. I was just like, how did we produce this much flavor in 30 minutes? It was crazy. It was so delicious. I think it was like a week and a half ago. I don't remember. You know, there's like dried porcini mushrooms engaged mm-hmm. and then like whatever other mushrooms. It was incredible. I'm going to make it again probably this week. It's so good. Although the one thing about, I often feel like when I make these recipes that I have used every thing in the kitchen. Like I've used every instrument, every mm-hmm. cooking instrument. Which is fine. I mean, it pays off. It's totally worth it, seemingly. So wow. That was so good.
Okay.
I'll
send it on over.
What it is. Well, I'm not going to share the recipe. If you want the recipe, buy the book.
Oh, buy the book, people.
It's incredible.
I broke my new coffee thing from Kinto.
Oh, my God.
I know. It was so sad. But
the whole thing, wasn't it like a whole kit?
Well, I dropped the glass part and it broke, but I can still use the drip thing in another container. It's just not the same. Anyways, it'll mm-hmm. all be fine. At some point, I will feel comfortable in just going and spending another $50. I just don't feel that way right
That's
now.
That's insane.
Why?
It literally lasted a week and a half.
Maybe 2 weeks, maybe.
Before, like, shattering.
But that was my fault.
Of course, but it's going to be your fault again. I know. Is what, like, a little glass... Like, this is the morning when one is asleep.
I need to get one made out of Pyrex, just so it's, like, a bit more... has more heft. Yeah. Anyways, that was... Stupid.
Sad.
Dumb. God, I don't know what else I can tell you. Is that our whole existence right now in
That's
the rain?
That's it. I don't know. I'm in like a fugue state.
Have you watched anything?
Oh, I've watched the Palm Royale.
And it's
called.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's okay.
Yeah, and I think she's really charming.
Yeah, I wish it was just, like, 1,000,000% more, like...
Crazy.
If your mom likes chicken, you know?
Yeah. I don't understand. Yeah, it should just be more of that, because it is a bit toned down.
Yeah, even, like, there are these things that you feel like they want to be really high energy, and they're just, like, flat.
Right. Like, why does Ricky Martin have to play a kind of, like, very inoffensive gay character? Is Ricky Martin one of the
worst actors?
I don't know.
Surprising.
He's great to look at.
He's apps. I mean, he looks incredible.
He's great to look
at. Head to toe.
They got a lot of makeup on his face. But he looks so... They have him dressed in these ways that really show off his body.
Honey. Okay. I have something difficult to talk about, which is this Jared Carmichael thing on HBO.
I don't know what that is.
I think it just came out a few days ago. So we won't really talk about it, but... It's crazy.
Who's Jared?
The comedian who is... I thought of him because, speaking of really bad actors, he was really bad in Poor Things.
He's in Poor Things? He plays...
He's with the, like, older woman who's giving her books on the boat.
Oh, is he African-American?
That's correct.
Okay, he's a comedian. One didn't know that.
Yes, so he's this comedian who, like, had an HBO special where he came out, like, a year, I don't know, some time ago. This is, like, a quote-unquote reality show, I guess? Okay. I don't believe a second of it is part of, like, but I also, like, don't believe a second of him. I'm like, I don't believe you in any way. But, like Ricky Martin, you're like, but I want to watch this. Because,
right.
Gorgeous.
Because being good looking is a thing.
It's the only way to be successful, turns out. That's the realization.
But literally in any industry at all, being good looking is really helpful. But
especially in the arts.
Yeah, indeed. My goodness.
This sort of goes against our Humphrey Bogart.
Even if you make paintings alone in a room, being good looking will literally
it's literally the whole thing, huge
advantage.
I know. I think I have to get like a personal trainer.
Jeremy, like, you're very good looking. All you need to do is put pictures of yourself on the internet, and you will instantly be a famous.
This is what I'm doing. Essentially,
you're gonna put some pictures of yourself.
I basically have to put myself in the work in order to do this because I can't bear it otherwise.
Yeah, this is what's happening. Honestly, just get some like kind of suggestive photos taken of yourself that also feel like kind of like unknowingly sexy. You're just like, well, I just was having my picture taken in my studio with some of my work and my shoulders slipped out, you know, like that.
Yeah, OnlyFans.
Yeah.
I mean, it is insane how true this is. Fortunately, I do feel like I am finding a way to formally justify going in that direction. That's all I'm saying.
Money, because like, money is formal now. Uh-huh.
No. Money is like obviously a reason to do it, and like fame and success or whatever.
Right.
But that's not an artistic reason to do it. No, so, that's true. I'm not against success or like sex or whatever.
Sex sells.
Because sex really sells.
It really does.
But I also think there's an aspect, I mean, in I think more so where I'm coming from, which is about, like, showing yourself and, like, not withholding everything, which is really what I want to do. So, a lot of what I'm doing is, like, thinking about, I mean, this really comes from my therapist of, like, how can you kind of use withholding as... to like do something. So mm-hmm. the aspect of, like, isolation and almost, like, socialized isolation, which is, like, a kind of social media universe of, like, people alone in their rooms, like, doing whatever. So that's kind of the direction I'm leaning into with, like, this character. And, like, fictionalizing myself out into the world. It's sort of the opposite of this documentary that I feel like it's so much about, like, oh, I'm just gonna, like, bear all and be like,
no.
Tell the truth. And I'm like, everything, your truth feels like a lie. So I don't know what's going on. The sexiest
thing you can do is appear to be alone in a studio, you know? That's the sexiest. That is, because...
Well, that's the vibe. It's good. Great. Yeah. Great.
Because then people are like, oh my God, I need to, like, go save them.
Well, I feel like this Jared Carmichael, like, this, because it's interspersed with these stand-up things, and he sits in a chair with, like, an unbuttoned shirt and kind of, like, stares at the floor telling secrets to a room full of people. Okay. And I'm just like, and there is a moment where, like, this friend who doesn't want to be on camera, so he, like, wears a, like, black mask over his face with, like, big black glasses. It's hilarious or stupid or whatever. And he's like, this is just, like, masturbatory. So, you know, there's some acknowledgement of, like, the absurdity of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And yet it continues. So I'm, I guess, titillated by it in a variety of ways. And we'll continue to watch it and also be cringe. And I'm also fascinated by it because I think there's something extremely, like, contemporary that it's expressing about, like, social media and privacy and, you know, reality TV, housewives, dramatized reality.
Right.
Celebrity, all these things. Because a lot of the narrative of this first episode is that he's going to the Emmys.
Uh-huh.
For that, I assume, for that HBO special where he came out. So there's also, like, the way in which kind of gayness is used for profit is also kind of bizarre and cringe. But definitely watch it. I think you'll have a lot to say about it. Also, full disclosure, I had to skip forward. And at some point, I thought, I should go back and watch this, and then I couldn't. I was like, I can't spend more time with this.
One cannot.
It literally made me feel ill. So. So I don't, I also, like, basically haven't even seen this full episode, but I can't. So the next episode, I'm going to try to watch straight through. Because going back is not an option.
This is episodic?
I assume. But here's another thing. I don't think I like stand-up comedy. I don't like comedians. I don't really like anything. So, like, I don't know. Did you see the opening SNL with the other Poor Things comedian? What is his name? Rami?
Rami Youssef?
Who's so cute and so tremendous in Poor Things.
Yes.
I thought he was very excellent.
Yes.
But I was watching the opening thing, and I just thought, this is just stand-up. I don't want to watch this.
This is just stand-up, and I don't want to watch it.
And I don't want to watch that. It's just like some guy telling me things, like, as if. No thanks. So, you know, there's a lot. But I did buy into that, like, coming out special, so I don't know. Whatever. To be continued, I guess.
I'm coming out. Boom, boom.
Oh my god.
That's what it was. I'm sorry, I apologize for the noises everybody just heard, but I was being busy gathering things for the day.
Oh, you've been working the whole time.
No, just the last 2 minutes. Because I just thought, well, I'm listening to Jeremy tell a story, but I can also use my hands.
Yeah. Beyonce really delivered with this album. I'm just going to say, many slays. I love Riverdance. I love Yaya. I love Look at That Horse. Look at That Horse. Come through. It's so funny. I think there are like a million laughs. I think Beyonce is just like telling us she can do anything and then proving it. She's like, I can go anywhere. I can do anything. And we're like, yes, thank you. Please continue.
We've always needed her. All right, Jeremy. I'm going to go now.
Get back to those spreadsheets.
I will. I literally will.
All right, well, we'll see you next week here on Dance and Stuff.
We loves you.
We loves you.
Bye-bye.